Today, I'm thrilled to be chatting to best-selling UK author Kimberly Chambers. Hi, Kim. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Yourself?
I'm great. We survived the storm here with Storm Garrett, so we're still alive anyway.
It's still a bit windy here where I am. I'm in Essex. It's still a bit windy here, yeah. It's been like it for a few days now, but obviously other people have had it worse.
Yeah, we just have to get on with it. So, Kim, you're now the queen of gangland crime. Can you tell us what you did before you started writing?
When I left school, I left school with virtually no exams. I mean, it was just CSEs back in the day. I didn't even go to a school that did O-levels. So I ended up, I went and got myself a job on the East End markets.
Brilliant.
So I used to sell ladies' fashion. I got a job with a Jewish guy called Harold, who I'm still very close to. He rang me this morning. He's in his 80s now.
Oh, brilliant.
So he gave me my first chance. And I worked for him for years. And it was back in the day when Roman Road Market really was the place to be.
Yeah.
But when the local council stopped the parking, that sort of killed it overnight. And the car, because there's no car parks for people to, that it's not like a shopping centre where you can park somewhere.
I know.
There's just nowhere to park. So that killed that. And then I went into DJing full time. And then when I got to about 29, a pal of mine was minicabbing for a firm in Romford. So I had a car that could be used as a minicab. I had a Granada at the time. So I tried my hand at that. And that was what I was doing.
Yeah.
I've only really had the three main jobs, you know, until I started writing at 38. And yeah.
Brilliant. But these sound very interesting jobs. I'd say you have to be able to stand up for yourself in those particular roles.
I've never been a girl that could do a normal, like, run of the mill, you know, travelling uptown in the rush hour type. You know, I've always been my own person. Do you know what I mean? Like, with the cabin, you could go in whenever you want. With the DJ, I could pick and choose what I wanted. Obviously, with the markets, I couldn't, you know, but it weren't like having a boss on the market. Do you know what I mean? We all got on so well. It was a small, I've never been out of doing like what my mum used to call a 9-to-5 job. So.
So the writing suits you as well then?
The writing suits me as well. I'm my own boss, aren't I? You know, you can, I mean, obviously you've got to meet deadlines and things, but, you know, I can write and choose to write when I want to write. And, you know, I normally write of an evening. And so, yeah, it suits me.
Brilliant. So the jobs that you had there, you had the market, you had DJing and you were a taxi driver. Have those jobs provided any material for your writing?
The market's a little bit, I think, more than anything, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't base my characters on anybody, but quite a few of my books that are set sort of in the 70s and 80s, Roman Road's always included in its heyday, because obviously I worked there and these characters are from the East End, so they would most definitely, the likes of Queenie and Viv in the Butler series, they most definitely would have gone there shopping, you know.
Yeah.
That would have been their highlight on a Saturday. Like, it was my mum and
her
mate. You know, my mum and mate used to get done up to the nines and go up there. You know, everybody did. It's whatever it was.
Yeah, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. I don't want to jump ahead too much, but Queenie and Viv, I know, and the Butler series, I couldn't understand it. They got done up to the absolute nines when they were going down to the market. And I thought they would have put on their comfortable shoes and rain jacket.
No. It was like, who could outdo, especially on a Saturday down there. It wasn't so bad Tuesdays and Thursdays, but Saturdays down the Roman back in the day, it was who could outdo who, like, who could get more glammed up than the next woman, like, and it was just on a sea of, like, all these glamorous women, like, with massive high heels on that couldn't walk in them because of the cobble, you know, and that was how it was, so.
And it's, that market is gone now, isn't it?
No, it's still there, it's still there. I mean, it went really down the pan for a while, and they've tried to sort of bring it up. It'll never be anything like it was, never, do you know what I mean?
It's, I know.
It's no, they killed it when they stopped the parking. I still don't think there's anywhere to park around there.
So pissy.
But I went up there. Yeah, I went up there a couple of years ago for something. My friend, like Pat, who's like a second mum to me, she's got a disabled badge. She parked an inch out of a square and they give her a ticket. Yeah.
Oh.
So 60 quid. Yeah, unbelievable.
Because we don't really have proper markets in Ireland. But I remember years ago, especially back in the 80s, when I'd go over to London, I used to love to go over and visit, and I used to love to go to Camden Market.
Yeah, Camden. I know that got set fire to or something at some point, didn't it, a couple of years ago? I think that's still going.
I know
there was a fire there. I remember that a couple of years ago, but I should imagine it's all still up and running now, you know. Yeah. I haven't been there. I used to go there. I haven't been there for years.
Yeah. So I recently read your new bestseller, The Sting, and I really enjoyed it. And I read it in one day. Can you tell your listeners about the story?
It's about, it starts off, it's about a young lad who's, you know, it starts in 1972. It's about a young lad, Tommy Boyle. And, you know, he's his life's not perfect, but he's happy. You know, he loves his mum, he loves his sisters, he loves his dog. And his dad works away on the oil rigs, and their dad's a bit of a jealous man. And sometimes, you know, if he comes home and he's heard rumours about the mum, he'll kick off. He's a bit violent.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he's looking forward to his dad coming home for Christmas. Like, it's Christmas Eve, and the dad doesn't arrive on time, and he turns up later sort of drunk, and there's a big kick off. But in the first few chapters, something happens in the book where Tommy's life is turned upside down.
That's right.
He ends up in South London, living there for a while, where he pals up with his family of sort of villains, Darlings.
That's right.
And then something happens there, and he ends up coming back to sort of east sort of London, Essex, and he ends up at a children's home in Dagenham. And that's where the story really moves on, because it's the relationships he makes in there. There's four or five of them that hang about together, and there's a girl that comes into it, and her nickname's Scratch.
That's
She's
right,
got the
yeah.
nickname because she self-harms.
Yeah.
And it's about the relationship. It's about first love. It's about the relationship him and her sort of have, and a promise he makes to her, which he can't keep. And in years to come, as the book jumps on decades, you know, he's, you know, working for this big villainous family, and she's on the other side of the law. She's now a policewoman.
That's right,
so obviously their paths cross again, you know?
Yeah.
So that's really what it's all about.
Oh no, it's a great read. It's so fast paced, and I started reading it on a Saturday, and I like my food, but I had to stop to eat, but that was the only thing that was taking me away from the book. That's it now, Kimberly. And I love to see your new book coming out, because I just absolutely love them. Now, the other ones, not all our listeners may know about your other books, but I've read them all, and my favourite ones, I know you're going to probably guess that, was the ones about the butlers.
Yeah, I think it's probably my favourite, The Butlers. I mean, I'm just writing the prequel to that series now.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm writing a prequel, and it shows you exactly how that family, it'll end in 1965 before the trap started, and it shows you all the upbringing of Queenie from a little girl and through the war and everything that's happened in that family to make them the way they are.
Yeah, because I think it's five books you have on that series, isn't it?
I do. There's The Trap is the first. There's Payback, The Wronged, Tainted Love, and then there's Backstabber. But obviously Backstabber joins two series together. It joins the Mitchell trilogy, The Feud, The Traitor, The Victim together. So really you need to read all those before you read Backstabber as the final one.
Oh, definitely. I definitely recommend that people should read those in order, because if you don't, you're going to spoil them.
Yeah.
Definitely spoil them. So for me, when I was reading them books, the Butlers, and there was the Mitchells as well, of course, there seemed to be some similarities with the Crays. Both families had a strong mother figure. She's the matriarch. She knows full well what her sons are capable of, but she'll defend them to the hilt. Would you agree that there's some similarities between them?
I think a lot of East End women were like that, you know. I think they were like, it's, you know, they did defend, and no matter what they did wrong, you know, whether it be their daughters or sons, you know, it was, they would defend it. You know, it was just the way people were, and some of them still are, you know. Obviously, it's not as ripe as it was back in the day, but it's, I mean, you know, they couldn't believe their boys could do anything wrong.
No. And it kind of...
I mean, obviously, In the Mitchell trilogy, and that he doesn't have a mum, Eddie. Like, you know, he's sort of, his mum's dead before that starts.
Yeah.
So he's just more with his dad and his brother. So, but I know what you mean. Like in the Butler ones, obviously you've got the aunt and the. But I mean, you know, she sees through like a couple of the characters as time goes on, Vivian, doesn't she?
She certainly does.
And you know.
Another thing I noticed about the similarities there with the Crays is the Butler boys, they were all very well dressed. They'd be dressed up to the nines. I remember seeing that in the Crays films that had the Kemp brothers in it, and they were like so proud of how well they could dress now that they had some money. That's kind of an integral part of the story too, isn't it?
Yeah. You've got to remember, I knock about with all these, not the Crays, obviously, but I'm friendly with all the... you know, the old school sort of you know, what are so-called villains. You know, I'm good pals with Chris Lambriano. I know Freddie Foreman. He's a lovely man. All that sort of crowd.
Yeah.
I'm very friendly with Ronnie Richardson, Charlie's widow. So I know that, but I never write my stories. I mean, I'm very friendly with the Frasers, Dave and Patrick, like Frank's sons. But I never base any stories on anything David tells me or whatever, you know.
Oh, no.
But he does like a little scene in a book, David.
Yeah.
I put him and Patrick in a couple of scenes in the Butler series. Like there's one bit where Queenie and Viv are fighting over him. Oh. They're good looking men, they're saying. They love that, the pair of them. They went, Kim, you could have given us two young birds.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. No, I think Queenie is very much an integral part of those books there now, very much herself, Queenie and Viv. They're very good. And finally, Kim, you seem to have some Irish characters in your books. Do you have any Irish relatives?
I don't. I mean, my dad always swore that my nan come from an Irish background, you know, but I asked who that was. I've got no one left to ask now because all my family are gone, which is a shame. People always swore blind that my nan went back, like there was Irish back in my nan. I'd like to go and, perhaps go back in time and, research my family tree at some point. Do you know what I mean? I know my mum's cousin did a little bit and I found out some things. I know all my dad's family was from the East End, you know, Mile End. But I'd like to find out one day. I came to Ireland recently for the first time, Southern Ireland, and I absolutely loved it.
That's right, you're on the Pat Kenny Show for News Talk.
Yeah, I was on News Talk.
I was listening to it and I said, he got in before me because I was on my mind to interview you. But I couldn't make it over the week to the station here and I thought, Pat got her before me. But it was a great interview.
I had a fantastic time out there though. I went over there I signed quite a lot of my latest books in the shops, like in Easons and that, you know. And I met booksellers and I met, book buyers and that. And what a lovely crowd of women. They were just such good fun. And obviously, like some people who work for HarperCollins over there, who I'm published by, they was out with us. We went for a lovely meal and we had such a good night. You know, everyone was just so lovely out there.
Yeah, well, that's nice.
Within seconds of arriving, I bumped into Louis Walsh in the street.
Oh. I don't know what to say. You were lucky at that or not. Because he doesn't spend that much time in Dublin. He does and he doesn't. He's actually from, he'd be near to here in Roscommon. He's actually from, originally from County Mayo, the west of Ireland. So.
Well, we were standing outside the hotel that we were staying at and he came up and spoke to the doorman there. So we were chatting to.
About Lulu. I think it's funny though, they call him Lulu on the X Factor.
He looked really. I don't watch it no more, but he looked really well up close. You know, he looked quite young and that, and he looked really well.
Ah, yeah, he's a great character. I'll give him that. Do you know?
If I'd have had a couple of beers, I'd have introduced myself, but I hadn't at that point.
I don't think he would have minded. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat today. It's been great talking to you, Kimberly.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show.
Not at all. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Lovely. Bye-bye. Take care.